We remain standing for the reading of the Gospel, the 21st chapter of John, the first 19 verses. Scholars believe this was an addition, that this wasn't part of the original text, but added on maybe to rehabilitate Simon Peter. A little conflict in the early church. I know that comes as a surprise that Christians would disagree about something. It begins this way. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, and he showed himself in this way. Gathered there together were Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples. Simon Peter said to them, "I'm going fishing." They said to him, "We will go with you." They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach, but the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, "Children, have you no fish?" And they answered, "No." He said to them, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you'll find some." So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because there were so many fish. That disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It's the Lord." When Simon heard that it was the Lord, he put on some clothes, for he was naked, and jumped into the sea. But the other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from land, only about 100 yards off. When they'd gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it and bread. And Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you've just caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. And though there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Now none of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" because they knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they'd finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter felt hurt because he'd said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." He said this to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. After this, he said to him, "Follow me." This is the word of the Lord. Please be seated. "I'm going fishing." Why would you do that? The previous chapter of John's Gospel is full of these marvelous appearances of Jesus in a dark cemetery, in a room that's locked, and then he shows Thomas his hands and his side. It's marvelous. And his best response is, "I'm going to go fishing." But if your conscience is screaming at you, maybe you long for the silence of the sea. The uncharted waters of resurrection scare him back to the familiar. Bold and brash, I can't even talk. Bold and brash from the beginning, Simon Peter has always jumped in with both feet without ever bothering to measure how deep the water is. When Jesus washed their feet at the Lord's Supper, he wanted his hands and head washed too. "I'm all in, Jesus." And when guards interrupted their prayer in the garden to arrest Jesus, it's Simon who draws a sword and lops off the ear of the high priest guard. But later that night, it's also Simon Peter who, when a servant says, "You look like one of those who was with Jesus," and he swears he was not. "I am not his follower," three times. John's gospel has a recurring theme in it. It takes that Old Testament name for God, the I Am, which is a wonderful name, really, when you think about it. There are no modifiers, nothing that limits, just I Am. And John's gospel takes it and tries to explain more about what it is for this light that came into our darkness that's not been overcome, this God who comes into our world and uses metaphors. "I am the bread of life. I am the living water. I am the light of the world." And yet Simon Peter, in a moment of testing, says, "I am not." Ever replay a conversation in your head wishing you'd said something else? Wishing you'd been stronger, braver, more articulate, maybe just a better person. But with Simon Peter, every replay is just barbed wire being raked over his conscience. His beloved friend, dead, now alive again, truly God among us. But where does that leave him? His denier, his fair weather friend. Who would ever want to do anything with him again? Who would ever trust him with anything again? He broke trust with God's own. "So I'm going fishing because I don't know what else to do." You're not alone in those feelings. In the early church, there were hundreds, if not thousands, of people who proclaimed their faith, but then when persecution came, they were afraid. Afraid to lose their lives, afraid to lose their livelihood. And they retreated to a safer time. They went back to the good old days when a knock on the door did not scare them half to death. Went back to gentler times when they no longer were afraid for the future of their children. And they gave up faith and settled for safety. But conscience still gnawed. We know this place, either in ourselves or from those close to us. Wednesday evening, Carol did such a wonderful job with the presentation about traumatizing theology and the throngs of people who have been shamed over the years by awful things taught, said, or done. And they leave the church to get away from that place which is annihilating their humanity. And yet there's a deep kinship with the sacred that remains. And perhaps even some have taken over the job of shaming them, and they shame themselves, but still wish for some connection with the sacred. Or maybe there's some moral failure that destroys reputation, or maybe just the responsibilities of living and raising children today that just gets overwhelming sometimes. Or maybe there are more difficult times that press on us as things we've never imagined, a darkness inside ourselves, the racism in our culture, hate that seems to sprout up like dandelions. And in the weariness of it, like Simon Peter, we just go fishing, maybe because we don't know what else to do. And so they did, fishing in the dark and catching nothing. At dawn, at the beginning of light, at the dawning of awareness, Jesus stands on the shore, his voice carrying across the water, "Children, caught anything?" What a tender way to address those who are speaking harshly to themselves. And they can only say, no, haven't caught anything. Well, try the other side. Oh, swell. Somebody who's not fishing is telling us how to fish. Well, maybe they were too tired to argue that they know what they're doing. So they just throw the nets over the other side, but the lines go taut quickly, and they're astonished, and they haul in a huge load of fish. And John says there are 153 fish. which is the same number of fish known at that time in that part of the world. A comment by John's gospel that it's for everyone. Then this little note that the net doesn't break. Luke tells this same story, but in Luke's gospel, the net breaks. Why does John change it? To emphasize the embrace of God that holds on. It's Simon Peter who has broken faith. It's Simon Peter who has denied. And in this story, it's this outreach from God that's going to hold on to him. And then John's gospel includes a detail that we really wish wasn't there. I read a lot of comments from a lot of scholars this week. I kept looking for some comment about this, but I couldn't find one. I'm sure somewhere someone has said something about it. But Simon Peter was fishing naked. And once you see that, it's difficult to unsee. Why include such an embarrassing detail about one of the leaders of the early church? Well, hold that thought. If you can. With this abundant catch, they recognize that it's Jesus. And so Simon Peter then gets dressed and then throws himself into the sea. Weighed down by soggy robes, he sloshes up on shore with no clue of what to do next. And the scene shifts, and it becomes painful and poignant and tender. Jesus fixes breakfast and serves them. Sounds like the Lord's Supper, only it's breakfast. And they're afraid to ask, "Who are you?" Afraid because, well, saying who he is out loud, the one from God who's overcome even death, saying that out loud makes going fishing look like they're running away. It would be an admission that they're just not up to following this one so powerful. After breakfast, Jesus takes Simon Peter aside and asks him if he loves him. Ask him three times if he loves him. Can you imagine being asked three times by somebody you care deeply for if you love them? Three times. Ask again and again. It's the third time that really gets to Simon Peter, and he blurts out, "You know everything. You know I love you. But you know everything. You know I lied. You know I denied. You know I was too afraid to even say that I know you. What else can I possibly say?" How can he defend himself? How can he pretend that his denial did not happen? How can anybody see him as trustworthy, as a friend again? He can't even see himself that way. "You know everything." And the embarrassing words about him fishing naked come to my mind. He put clothes on, dove into the sea. Anything to cover himself, to hide himself again. But now he stands here before Jesus, his soul naked and so vulnerable. "You know everything." But he also says, "And you know that I love you." We're such an either-or people, we can't see that this is both and. But perhaps it's the naked brokenness, this raw awareness of personal failure that opens us up to loving and being loved. No way to justify himself. All he can do is receive. And Jesus gives him a couple of gifts. And the first of those is the gift of belonging, something we all need. This is not fitting in. That's what teenagers do when they're afraid of not being accepted by the group. They change the way they dress. They change their hair. They change everything, the language included, to try to fit in. No, belonging is so much deeper. It's being found acceptable just as you are. It's being fully known and accepted. Being fully known and loved. We all need to belong. When Simon Peter denied knowing Jesus, when he said, "I am not," he was rejecting his true self. And Jesus, questioning him three times about loving him, reaffirmed who he needs to be. Gives him the chance to say again, "Yes, I am. I am his follower. Yes, I do love him." Caroline Lewis wrote that denying our identity is all too often reality. We deny who we are because we worry we won't meet expectations. We deny who we are because we're afraid to disappoint. We deny who we are because we could be judged, even rejected, for that truth. We deny who we are because we do not believe that we will be liked for who we truly are, or that we will be loved for who we truly are. Simon stands there, stripped bare, and discovers that he is loved. And it strikes me that the way we come into this world is naked and vulnerable, and that Simon Peter is almost literally being born again. Jesus offers belonging. The most profound of questions: do you love me? Yes? Well, then forgive yourself, because I already have. Reminded of the preacher who was asked if he'd ever baptized any great people. And he said, "No, just beginners. Just beginners like myself." And Jesus also gave him purpose. He said, "Feed my sheep." This is so much more than a Hallmark vocation. He said it three times, and it's not sentimental stuff. It's a task that involves hard work and that involves courage. It's not just about carrying lambs back to the fold. It's also about standing between the wolf and the sheep, between the predator and the prey. Purpose is that belief that what we do matters, that I matter, that I have gifts to bring to the table, a contribution to make. When talking to couples who are planning to marry, I always ask them a question about what their gift to the world will be. When it's all said and done, what do you want your gift to be? What's the purpose of your life? Feed my sheep. Take care of them. Here's purpose. Here's a reason to get up in the morning. To care for others. I believe in you, Simon Peter. You may not believe in yourself yet, but I believe in you, and you can do this. At Friday church, we have a room full of people, most of whom will leave here and go downstairs to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, a 12-step program to help them cope with addiction. And when they think about tending the sheep, they're talking about tending to each other. They're talking about protecting themselves from the predator within and from the predator without. And they're talking about doing that for each other. And to me, it's a beautiful picture of what we are to do for one another, to continue our healing and our growth, to do away with the shaming, to continue ever more deeply the loving. Feed my sheep. There's purpose. And he tells him, "Someday you'll be old, and someday somebody else will take you by the hand and lead you where you don't want to go." And he says this is to show what kind of death he would glorify God with. But truthfully, for most of us, glorifying God with our death is not much on our minds. It's more about how to live our lives now. It's more about coming to that time knowing we did it. And glorifying is about revealing the character of God. And tending to one another shows the character of God. Treating this whole net of peoples as gods shows the character of God. Standing between predators and prey, standing between the strong who prey on the weak, all that glorifies God. So the question before us: do we love God? And then, what are we going to do about it? Amen.